aerospace and defense manufacturing.
Machines and automation.
Additive manufacturing.
Smart manufacturing.
A global manufacturing economy.
Welcome to Advanced Manufacturing Now, the podcast for manufacturing professionals, powered by SME. From the design screen to the shop floor to final assembly, we drive the conversation about making manufacturing smarter by connecting people who are passionate about manufacturing. Visit us at SME.org.
Today's episode is sponsored by our guest.
Welcome to Advanced Manufacturing, the podcast for manufacturing professionals. I am your host, Bruce Morey, Senior Technical Editor for Manufacturing Engineering Magazine. Our topic today is the discussion around scaling digital additive manufacturing for medical applications. The response of the 3D printing community to the specific shortages during the COVID-19 pandemic has helped to quickly raise the level of awareness of 3D printing and created a lot of buzz. You know, I know because I participated in some of that buzz myself. But the realistic, scalable response may be somewhat different than what has been in the headlines and what I've been reporting on. Matt Coons, Director of Business Development for Forecast 3D, will discuss this with us today. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. Yeah, really looking forward to diving into it. Certainly is an interesting time to be living in. And, you know, I think we're all seeing how we can come in and try to help and, you know, and also some of the challenges coming from it. So, yeah, looking forward to digging in.
So your company, Forecast 3D, has been around for a while. Can you give us a little more insight into your company and its somewhat unique service?
Yeah, you bet. So Forecast really came into existence as a prototyping house, mostly. So the forecast, you know, there's a little play on words in there with casting. So we were doing urethane casting, so into silicone molds. So something we still do today, which is great for really high grade prototypes or small scale production. But pretty early on, started adopting 3D printing. Initially, that was to make master molds or master models for the mold, but then showed that it had real possibility for making, at that point, prototypes. And then as the technologies continued to develop, really recognized the capability for additive to be used for a manufacturing solution. So we are at this point, I believe, the largest in the U.S. install base of HP's MJF, multi-jet fusion printing technology. We have somewhere around 30 printers and continue to expand that. We also earlier, I guess it was right at the end of 2019, joined forces with GKN Powder Metallurgy and their additive side. So they saw in us a partner in the plastics and composite side, whereas they have a lot of experience and background in the metal side. And they're in the development stages now, or rolling out stages now, frankly, of printed metals with HP as well. So the binder jet technology. So really made a nice marriage there, where they were also in the process of looking at this as a scalable for manufacturing solution. So my focus with Forecast 3D has been more on bringing this to a scalable and, you know, manufacturing platform type of a solution.
So you service many different industries, including medical. What makes AM well suited for medical applications?
Well, there are a handful of things. It can, you know, I think pretty drastically simplify and shorten the supply chain. So instead of depending on a number of different suppliers for your raw materials, if you're building a part, you can go to one. So especially if you're working with just one technology. So MJF, let's say, is a great one to kind of think about in this regard, because you can both prototype and go all the way from like early stage proof of concept type parts to production scale using the same material in the same print orientation, and have something that you can go back on for your design records, et cetera. So again, simplify and shorten the supply chain. You're dealing with one material and are able to take that from prototype all the way through to production without having to change the place of manufacture, the orientation of the parts. So you really have a lot more control of that. You can also handle more complex geometries. So traditional manufacturing, you might be limited by what you can do in a CNC machine or whatever it may be that you're using to build these.
And the human body is made up of very complex surfaces and geometries, right?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, one of the things that I think has gained a lot of attention and you see a lot of discussion about is that you can do things that are really specific to a patient. So even though, like, in a build space, if you think about it, you can do, let's say, 100 parts, right? And those can all be 100 exactly the same, or they can be 100 that are designed or developed for each individual patient, so that they have a unique geometry that is associated with that patient.
You know, I've seen that in dental quite a bit.
Exactly.
Is that a good example? Okay.
Yeah, that's a great example. And that's one of the places, you know, you look at people like SmileDirect and they're a heavy user for just that very reason, is that your cost to produce, whether it is 100 of the same exact looking thing or 100 of all unique, is basically the same. So that's one of the things that makes it really unique, is you don't have a tooling cost that ends up making that prohibitive.
Very good.
Yeah.
So given that background that you have in this, you know, what are some of the hurdles faced by companies looking to leverage AM for their commercial products?
Yeah, I think there are a few things. You know, perception of additive manufacturing has been really around it being a solution for prototyping and rather than production. So there's been a hesitance to adoption of it, looked at more as a niche solution rather than something that is truly a scalable solution. I think that has caused some real hesitation for adoption. You know, no one wants to lead the way. It's done well in certain areas, but is a little slower to be taken on.
Well, that leads me to a certain question then. Is it, what are the reasons for people being hesitant about that? Is it concerns about quality, liability? You know, what could be some of the reasons behind that?
So the FDA has provided some guidance, but I think one of the hesitations that people have is along traceability and material traceability. So if you are dealing with lots of powder or resin or whatever it may be, one of the things that you're able to do in a hard part, right, and something that is not starting from this kind of a medium is you know where your materials are all the way through. So there is some guidance around that, but I think that that's one of the hesitations that people have. And I also think that there's a degree of it where there's a reliance on low-priced parts that are, I would say, the reason they're priced as low as they are is does a disservice, I think, to the actual production of a part. So when they look at 3D printing, they say, okay, this should be, or additive manufacturing, this should be the cost of the materials and the print time, easy as that. But there is a lot that goes into it. You still have to have, you know, quality controls around it. You still have to have engineers that are looking at the parts and making sure that they are indeed oriented correctly, and then post-processing. So almost no 3D printed part comes out without some type of post-processing that needs to happen.
And probably some upfront design work as well, right? Because these parts are so unique compared to a CNC machine part that you would need a different kind of design process, I would think.
Yeah, that's right. And some companies have done a great job with bringing people in that have the understanding of design for additive. Those that don't, we offer some services on that. So we have people in-house that can take something that is designed for CNC, look at it and make it more suited for additive manufacturing, sometimes removing whole sections, saving a lot of material or weight, or improving the overall functionality of a part, combining two into one, that sort of thing. So, you know, I think that those areas are really helpful. I think the locking in of design has been one of the things that is also gives people pause, is because it's so easy to make changes.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. People will iterate and iterate and iterate and not quite get the same sort of thing as locking in your design. If you are committed to a tooling supplier or a larger scale thing, you'd lock your design really early on. And that's really key for medical, right? Is knowing that this is done, we're going to this. So the issue of being able to do that is something that I think people run into.
It reminds me of the phrase that better is the enemy of good enough.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So it sounds like there's a number of misconceptions that you run into around the role of AM in medical device manufacturing. Are there others?
Yeah, I think that some of the other things that you run into with it are that it's not scalable, is that you only can do a few parts. You know, I think that it's just the broad knowledge that you can actually go from, you know, a few parts to hundreds of thousands is just not getting out there as much yet. You know, I think we have some examples now that really are changing that view. You know, I think whether it's in the dental space or some of the work that we're currently doing, that we hope will spark some more interest in this and shed some more light on the possibility and what it really looks like to go from a few hundred parts to a million parts, which is a reality with this technology. So I think that's, you know, definitely been something that has caused some hesitation. And there's also people need to be able to come in and be willing to be leaders in it and build the production mentality. So, and that goes for companies like ours as well, right? Is being able to internalize and understand the difference between quickly turning out prototypes and being able to take that and transition prototype into a production mentality. So doing the same thing, monitoring results and doing that. So that's a place that it's been really interesting to watch us develop as a company around that and put those production scale processes into place.
It sounds like it wouldn't be just the producer, you, but also your customer would also have to be comfortable with scaling up as well, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's something, you know, that's where one of the real benefits of additive comes into play, right? Because instead of having to, if you're scaling, instead of having to add entire production lines. So if you have a bespoke tool, whether it's injection molded or, you know, a multi-stage, you know, assembly line or something along those lines, if you're looking to scale, all you need to do is validate onto another printer and another printer. So you can start with one and scale it up. And so your numbers really start to build out of that. And so that's where you can start by building a few hundred prototypes in one printer. You validate it the next, and, you know, all of a sudden here we are. You know, today, I think we're up to the capacity of building about 100,000 nasal swabs, so the nasopharyngeal swabs, 100,000 a day.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, and that means that you have to know your process and do it in a way that is repeatable in multiple machines. But it makes that scaling idea and the concept of distributed manufacturing a reality. You know, we can send this design now to someone overseas if there's a need for the same build to happen in Europe or wherever. It can be plugged in as long as those same steps are taken in a much more adaptable way.
So that leads to the thought, I heard a term the other day called a print farm, which I haven't heard before. Is that what you're talking about, having many, many machines on the floor producing the same thing? And is that how you scale up?
Yeah, that's right. That's one way for sure. We have, if you saw our floor of MJF, it is, you know, you have 30 machines in one room. Sometimes those are building different unique builds, but as you know, you can dedicate certain sections to be focused on just one, and also sort of be able to sort of cordon off areas. So if you're building with a specific material, you're building for medical, you have more controls around what the people handling, you know, the post-processing, what they need to be wearing in terms of protective materials and that sort of thing. You can really control that, you know, a lot easier than going in and having to, you know, build a whole new room for it or whatever you're looking at.
So let's talk about the 800-pound gorilla. And you kind of mentioned that before with the nasal swabs. You know, it sounds like this COVID-19 crisis has provided a lot of opportunities for 3D printing or AM to help. What has been your perspective in that regard?
It's been tough. Early on, there was a lot of excitement, and I think there was a lot of press on it. You know, I think everyone looked at this and said, oh, here's a solution. Here's something we can do. You know, I think a good example, and you've seen it a lot and almost been beaten to death, is the face shield. So face shields and face masks are a big issue, right? So a lot of different solutions were provided and provided quickly. But we go back to that. At some point, you have to lock in a design, right? So the iterations we're having, any design. Yeah, you have to lock it in, and you have to be able to also have it scalable. So the first issue, or the first versions that we were receiving, we were coming out at our build cost. So this is materials, time, processing, around the $40 mark. Now, where the win on this is that we were able to iterate it down and get these down into, you know, single digit, $5, $6 for a face shield, right?
Wow.
So that's,
really?
That's building an adjustable, really nice adjustable headband, also finding a supplier for the clear plastic. But those still, you know, you're then in competition with very simple designs that if you're not necessarily caring about the adjustability, you can find a simple design for a few dollars. And those you couldn't find for a while, but as those came back onto the market, it was at about the same time that we were landing on a really good design that worked really well in additive and worked really well in the MJF platform.
And that was a design that you really couldn't produce any other way?
That's correct. That's correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it ended up integrating in, you know, an adjustability and works really well. And it's something that we're still producing. And so that, I think, continues to be something that is, I would say, a light win in it. But the real challenge that we saw was a lot of really good intentions, a lot of people coming in with designs. Everyone was trying to find a solution and find more PPE. So face masks, designs coming in for that as well. But then when you run up against some of the requirements, you know, the NIH and FDA did give sort of a like a light checkoff on some of these parts, saying, yeah, this is suitable in emergency and these technologies are suitable to do it. But you're still looking at some of the, you know, the masks that you would then have to source elsewhere, a filter component that would go into it. You know, you're still looking at a $30, $40 mask, whereas the typical N95 or whatever it was far less. And so the budget around that was a really challenging thing to address for folks as well. You know, I think what it did show, and one of the things that was neat to see out of it, frankly, was to see the individual builders and people with their own printers sort of jumping to help. Because they're not necessarily dealing with the same types of liability issues that a large company is. So if we're supplying these in and saying, yeah, these are suitable for use for whatever it is, there has to be a lot of quality control going into that and something to back up what you're claiming on it, where an individual builder who's just doing this for someone that lives down the street or their local hospital or whatever it is, can have a little bit more leeway in that because it's a goodwill type of a thing.
Is the industry at a level of standards where you could have just sent them a design and they could have printed that design rather than having to design it themselves?
There was some of that, yeah. You know, there, and you can still find them, some, you know, free released designs that are out there. And that is something that I think helped with that being able to happen as well, is people were going in and looking at a design, making it better for FDM, making it better for whatever type of technology. And some of that was what would come to us, frankly, is someone would find one of these designs online and come and say, okay, can you build 10,000 of these? But then when you're looking at it at a scaled side, it didn't make sense. You know, and if you're a home builder, you think of it in terms of, you know, the pennies of material that it costs, because you just set it, go back to dinner, whatever it is, and it builds. And that didn't equate to the same sort of level when it was at a scaled side.
So independent of standards, let me rephrase the question this way. You know, has the industry matured enough to the point where you can send designs around just in general and people can pick them up and understand them enough to get their machines to build whatever part design you're sending them?
Yes. I would say it depends to some degree. Yeah, absolutely. You know, if it's something where you're dealing with the same type of machinery, there are a limited number of things that go into a recipe, right? And so if you have the design and you know the material and you know the build settings that you put into the machine, you know, absolutely you can share that and make that something that is scalable. And that's the whole idea of being able to do distributed manufacturing. And that's one of the things that this has really shown us is when you have a disruption of supply chain like we've had, it's a really good opportunity to start to take a look at how can you do this locally? How can we solve some of these things in such a way? And whether it's the long-term solution or just something that is qualified. And so that's one of the things that we're really pushing is like, look, you never know when a pandemic's going to happen. You don't know what's going to disrupt the supply chain for some of these parts. And so there's a value, even if the per part cost is higher in additive, the value of making sure that that process and products coming out of that process are acceptable and qualified makes it so that if there is another disruption, there isn't the same pause. You don't have to start from zero again. Yeah. You know, this has now been a proven out thing. And if you think about it in opportunity cost there, right? So all of a sudden, instead of having a huge shortage and scrambling and having people hoard things, you have a solution that is readily available that you can really quickly implement. And that, I think, is one of the areas that this has shown we can do. We just need to be able to have more people accept that and start to work this into their specifications. Even if it's only as a secondary solution, being able to have, you know, a percentage of the parts coming from additive is a good start.
Well, I think that's a good way to close out the podcast. Thanks for coming on the show today, Matt. If anyone wanted to learn more about Forecast 3D in general and your role in AM for medical in particular, how should they go about that?
Well, I mean, it's easy to find information on us online. You know, forecast3d.com has a fair amount of information. We're pretty heavily blogging right now. I think we just had a great article go out, actually, through GKN that I saw talking about hitting our millionth nasal pharyngeal swab.
Wow!
So we're printing those fast as they can fly out the door. And you know, to be clear, that's one big customer who started out and wanted to get a bunch of these and be able to supply for a longer period of time with them. So, you know, anyway, the website is a great way. There are contacts on there. I'm always happy to talk about it. My background is in the medical side and manufacturing around medical. And so there's a big focus that I have on that. So we'll typically answer an email pretty quickly. So happy to get into it with anyone that has more questions.
And listeners can contact you through your website?
So yeah, through our website is a great way. And, you know, frankly, I'm interested in hearing what people are doing in this and helping bring more medical products. So shoot me an email. My email is MatthewK@forecast3d.com and happy to address whatever you can throw at me.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
You bet.
To find more advanced manufacturing podcasts, visit us at advancedmanufacturingnow.com or search for Advanced Manufacturing on your smartphone's podcast link. As always, SME and SME Media can help you keep abreast of developments in automation, robotics, and smart manufacturing on our website, sme.org/latest-news. And be sure to review our webinar schedule for the rest of the year, available at the SME website in the Manufacturing Resource Center. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advanced Manufacturing Now. If you liked what you heard, feel free to share the show and head over to iTunes, where you can write a review and subscribe to keep up with future episodes. Don't forget, you can join the conversation and learn more at advancedmanufacturing.org.